slower than the old one. We are now recording.
Hey, it's 9:01, September 22nd. I'd like to call the Arizona State Board of Technical Registration in session. My name is Jack Gilmore. I'm standing in for Jason Foose. Kurt, could you please do the roll call?
Dr. Alejandro Angel?
Here.
Jack Gilmore?
Here.
Neil Jones? Here. Jason Foose? Clarence McAllister?
Here.
Carmen Wyckoff?
Here.
Stephen Knoll?
Here.
Andrew Everode?
Here.
And we have three vacancies, but we have a quorum.
Okay, thank you. Time for a call to the public. Members of the public may address the board during this call to the public for no more than 3 minutes. Pursuant to ARS 38431.01H, the board members are not allowed to discuss or take action on the matters raised during an open call to the public unless the matters are properly noticed for discussion and legal action. However, members may ask staff to review a matter and may ask that a matter be placed on a future agenda. Anybody want to call in from the public on any issues?
I have not received anyone requesting to talk on this telephonically, and I don't, there's nobody here.
Okay, let's move on to adoption of minutes. 4A, approve, modify, and reject board minutes, meeting minutes for August 20th. Any discussion on these minutes? If not, can we get a motion?
Mr. Chair, I'd vote to approve the minutes of the meeting of the August 20th, 2020 board meeting.
Second.
Thank you, Dr. Alejandro. Kurt, can we do a roll call, please, on the vote?
Dr. Alejandro Angel.
Aye.
Jack Gilmore.
Aye.
Neil Jones.
Aye.
Clarence McAllister.
Aye.
Carmen Wyckoff.
Aye.
Stephen Knoll.
Aye.
Andrew Everode.
Abstain.
Okay. Motion carried.
Okay, item 4B, approve, modify, and or reject executive session meeting minutes for August 20th. Now we have two executive sessions. Can we vote on these together? Is it McCann?
I think we voted together if there are amendments to the motion.
I think we got copies of that, those minutes in our packets. Any discussion? Okay, a motion?
Mr. Chair, I vote to approve the executive session meeting minutes from August 20th for items B1 and B2.
Thank you, Mr. Jones. Is there a second?
Second. Clarence McAllister.
Thank you. Okay, Kurt, you call the roll.
Dr. Alejandro Angel.
Aye.
Jack Gilmore.
Aye.
Neil Jones.
Aye.
Clarence McAllister.
Aye.
Carmen Wyckoff.
Aye.
Stephen Knoll.
Aye.
Andrew Everode.
Abstain.
Okay, motion passed.
Okay, thank you. Okay, we have a hearing. It starts at 9:30 in 25 minutes. We have many items on our dismissal or closure agenda. The first five, A6A1, 2, 3, 4, and 5, are all related. So I'd like to see if we could run those concurrently. And if we have people calling in, Kurt, can you confirm?
All right, so you wish to go over 6A, 1 through 5?
Yes.
Okay. So, on my call-in list for 6A, 1 through 5, I have the alleger, Dan Demland. Mr. Demland, are you on the phone?
Yes, I am.
For 6A, 2, I have Joe Carr, who is the attorney on behalf of Chad Komnick, respondent. Mr. Carr, are you there?
Yes, I am. Thanks.
Mr. Komnick, are you there?
He's not. I'm
okay. And I also see that Mr. Carr is on behalf of Mr. Hernandez for 6A3. Is Mr. Hernandez also not appearing?
That's correct.
6A4, I have Kevin Gillies. Is Mr. Gillies? And if you are muted, you can do *6 to unmute yourself. And I apologize if I'm not saying your last name correctly. Kevin Gillies, G-I-L-L-I-E-S. Okay, so I'll continue on to 6A5. Scott Roberts, is a Mr. Roberts on the phone? Okay, I'm not hearing a Mr. Roberts. And then we have a 6A4 and 6A5, James Hansen, who is the attorney for Mr. Roberts, Mr. Gillies. Mr. Hansen, are you on the phone? Okay. Remember, *6 to unmute yourselves if that's an issue. We can also try to call out and call back in. All right. So I did not have anybody for 6A4, 6A5 on our list communicate that they are present. But I do have the 6A1, the ledger, and the 6A2, 6A3 attorney.
Well, is it appropriate to read the synopsis for your complaint, all five?
You can, but you don't have to, right, Scott?
Right. You certainly can.
Well, let me go through the first one so that we can kind of establish a reference. There are five cases here for dismissal, but I'm going to read through 6A1, the synopsis.
6A1 isn't part of it.
Yeah, it's all part of.
Okay, gotcha. Sorry.
It's all related.
Sorry.
Yeah. So, 6A1 is case number P20021, and the respondent is John Trummer. The synopsis of that complaint: on August 18, 2019, the board received a complaint alleging that respondent signed and sealed a trust design plan that was prepared by non-registrant employees of Trust Fab LLC on fire restoration of retail building project at 5635 North 59th Avenue in Glendale, Arizona, on or about May 8, 2019. The investigative conclusions: this investigation concludes that there were no violations of the Board's Practice Act identified during this investigation. All five of these are related to activities involving Trust Fab and MyTech Engineering. And I guess I just want to open it up for discussion right now. Mr. Demlin, would you want to start your presentation? The ledger, Dan Demlin?
Yes. May I begin now?
Please do. Identify yourself for the record.
Sure. My name is Daniel Demlin. I am a registered architect. I am the alleger on the complaint. What the basis of this complaint was, I was hired to do a fire restoration project for a client, and the client went directly to TrustFab to design the trusses. The trusses did not design my plans and specs, and ultimately, TrustFab opted to not do anything, saying that it was not their fault, even though they failed to do fire approval submittal process. They did not even do the full submittal to City of Glendale. As part of that, I contacted the MyTech people, who are the three respondents, engineers. And I had talked to the company and said, hey, you need to oversee this. And I was told they didn't even look at the drawing. On the cover sheet of all their calculations, there is a comment that MyTech puts on, and I believe, quote, The trust lines referenced below have been prepared by MyTech USA under my direct supervision, based on parameters provided by TrustFab LLC. Typically, you see something like this in a point of trying to limit one's liability. And if I'm trying to limit my liability by saying the work was done with someone else, I cannot be looking at that person to be a bona fide employee as required by the state statutes of Arizona. If you're truly a bona fide employee, agency law would hold the work done by that employee accountable 100% if it's done with faith to the original company. MyTech does not renew the business lines, and this is a problem because the TrustFab people in on a particular project like this, after they received a complaint, there's a second project that they went ahead and did several months later that I also present at the EAC, where they actually changed the trust design to go onto a wall that was bearing that the structural engineer of record had not wanted it. When you start seeing this type of change, when you start seeing engineering being done by non-engineers, and of course, the non-registered respondents in this
room
had said in meetings with my presence and with the Dave Lindale people present saying they engineered it, which you can't sit claim that title unless you are registered in the state of Arizona. So when you start to look at this whole thing, you see that MyTech is really just stamping drawings by information presented by a non-registrant, allowing that non-registrant to basically practice. Now, I'm familiar with this as a member of the EAC because I've seen many of these when I rule the same way on those. The only reason I wasn't able to present at the EAC is I only had 7 days notice and was unable to rework my work schedule to be there. So the fact that the EAC brought back a dismissal is not uncommon because I wasn't there to present my case. I'm here to plead my case to the board. If you look at this, it's very, very clear that MyTech is paid by TrustFab to use their trust application, web application to do their calculations, and yet MyTech is sitting there saying, we absolve ourselves from any issues because we don't check that stuff. We get that information. Oh, by the way, this is our bona fide employee. You cannot isolate yourself from that bona fide employee status under agency law, the doctrine of agency law. So this whole setup, now, does this have huge impact? Yes, it does. It has huge impact because TrustFab is not the only applicator that uses MyTech in this way. The problem that I also found out is that the registrar contractor sees TrustFab and other fabrication facilities like this as unregulated because they see it as a material supplier. So we're sitting here where we've got non-registrants not complying with BTR rules. We've got registrants aiding and abetting this because they won't review the drawings. They sit there and say, the rules are put in, we base off of that. Well, where's the responsibility of the engineer? And who's taking on responsibility in cases like this where there's deviation from the plan, or even on the other case that Robert Polkar and Associates did, where the trusses were completely rotated 90 degrees and bearing on a wall that the structural engineer of record did not want because he couldn't identify. Very similar to the condition I had. I needed the trusses to bear over the center of the wall because I did not know what the reinforcing would be for eccentricity, load, all that stuff. So when it came out, it was bearing 4 inches short and it's barely hitting the wall and TrustFab says there's a wasn't my fault. They didn't even follow their own drawing. Right now, the framing plans are not sealed, which is a violation because this exceeded all the exemptions, so it had to be sealed. But MyTech doesn't seal the framing plan. That's done by their bona fide employee that they're trying to limit their liability over. You sit there, you look at what MyPath did, MyTech did, and they didn't check the dimension. Come to find out that Kevin, when he went out there, from what I heard from the contractor, had like a 12 or 15 foot tape measure and measured along the ground to figure out how long the trusses were. The whole thing shows that there's a huge lack of training. MyTech is claiming under the defense here that, oh, these are our bona fide employees. Oh, by the way, we're going to limit our liability by saying they're going to be responsible for their work, which takes away all application or an attempt to take away all application of agency law. And all of a sudden now, we've got people who are buying clients of ours who are buying stuff that they're thinking is being done by registrant engineers. It's not. And when things go south, my tech sits there and says, not our problem. We don't have responsibility. And I can tell you through several cases I've done this type of work, we have disciplined previous registrants for doing very much the same thing. So I think if to dismiss this at this point is a slap in the face for all those past ones where we held registrants accountable for doing very much the same thing. With that, thank you for your time.
Thank you, Mr. Dillman. We've got any more call-ins, Kurt?
I would say Mr. Carr, as he's the attorney for two of the respondents.
Okay, Mr. Carr, are you present? Joe Carr?
Yes, I am present.
Okay. Question?
No.
Oh, Mr. Carr, would you like to make a presentation to the board, please?
Yes, I mean, with all due respect to Mr. Demlin, I think he has there's a real misunderstanding as to MyTech's role in the industry and in this particular project. MyTech is a component designer. It designs metal plate connected wood trusses in accordance with ANSI TPI, which is incorporated into the building code in every state and country. Including Arizona, that's part of the building code. It deals with a single client, in this case, Truss Bath. It never dealt with Mr. Demlin. It never communicated with Mr. Demlin at all. And first time it heard of Mr. Demlin was when it received the complaint in this matter. It never heard of this particular fire reconstruction project. What it received was a set of truss design parameters, the span of a truss to be designed, so where to be supported, the types of loads, and various other parameters. Those were electronically transmitted to MyTech, as happens in literally millions of designs over the country per year to MyTech engineers. Those parameters are used. They're not sealed. We provided in response the exact copies of the electronic transmission that was sent to MyTech from Truss Bath that looked absolutely nothing like a truss design. And it's not a truss design. Information from those truss parameters were in fact used by MyTech engineers in preparing truss component design, which were dutifully sent back after they were prepared and sealed to MyTech only client, Truss Bath. At that point, MyTech had nothing further to do, and MyTech was never contacted and even made aware that there was any discrepancy or any issue whatsoever. We requested to do a number of truss designs. There was, we found out after, there were three different occasions where MyTech was requested to do truss designs. One was in April of a second, where Mr. Chad Komnick ended up being the engineer for truss design. Later, there was a single truss design that was MyTech was asked to put a label on of the repair. It wasn't really a a repair of an existing truck. It was just a truck, original truck design that was had a label at the customer's request of repair. That was provided at May 14th. And there was a third truck design that was requested and dated by Marcos Hernandez on May 30th. No one really has ever challenged anything, that there was anything wrong with any of the truck designs. Nor could they. They were exactly compliant with the truck design parameters provided by my only client. On that basis, you know, I really failed to see that there is a legitimate challenge to anything that my engineers have done. It was wholly in compliance with was requested by its only client and wholly in compliance with the established design procedures set forth in ANSI TPI, which expressly provides that the truss component manufacturer is to obtain parameters from building plans or the building architect or engineer and submit those design parameters to the truss design engineer. That is what happened in this case.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Carr. I want to hear from some of the other...
I was going to say that I noticed that a Mr. Roberts had signed on, as he is also a respondent under 685.
Okay.
Mr. Roberts, did you want to speak on this matter? We are looking at agenda items 6A1 through 6A5. And star 6 to unmute yourself if you're muted. Mr. Roberts is still muted. Star 6 to unmute yourself.
Mr. Roberts?
Yeah, he's still muted. Mr. Roberts, you can also try to hang up and call back in. Star 6 is the usual method to unmute yourself.
Yeah. While we're waiting for Mr. Roberts to sign in, can we ask our investigator to come forth?
Mm-hmm.
Thank you. I've read through all these EACs, you know, quoted some communication errors, but every one of these things indicates there are no violations of the board practice.
Correct.
Can you share, there's a lot of finger pointing going on here. What did you discover in your research?
So it was about a 4-hour EAC meeting where there was interviews between all five respondents. The EAC members concluded that there was no violation through all five respondents. There was no, there wasn't any, it was a very, they indicated that it was a very convoluted case project. Really, that they just couldn't find anything wrong. The communication, there was a lack of communication, but no violations. That's all they kept saying. They really looked at it very thorough. It was a 4-hour EAC, so they just didn't find anything.
Okay.
The alleger did provide a written statement, but did not appear, as he said. Everybody else appeared. Everybody was interviewed thoroughly. All the questions were asked, and it just the conclusion was no violations.
Is Mr. Roberts on? Thank you, by the way. Is Mr. Roberts on?
He's still muted. He may have called in and walked away, or...
He may have to hit star 6 to...
And again, Mr. Roberts, star 6 to unmute yourself if you wish to respond. I do not have the capability of unmuting you from this end. You would have to unmute yourself, so star 6 to do so. If you're on their computer, then there should be a bubble in the middle of your screen bottom that lets you unmute yourself.
You know, in light of the fact that the EAC is, you know, every one of those guys said there's no violation, I guess I'm I'm inclined to accept the staff recommendation for dismissal, but I want to open this up for discussion to the board. Any board members want to discuss this?
Mr. Chairman, this is Carmen Wyckoff, and I do want to say that I know Dan Demlin in a professional capacity, but I wasn't involved in this case at all. And deferred submittals, I think, is a really weird area that we rely on very heavily in Arizona. Definitely not an expert. The only thing I can think is looking at TrustFab's plan layout that's on page 475. That is not stamped and signed. And I didn't know if from the EAC, if you could tell me what their thoughts are. It seemed to be kind of the gap, I guess, in the chain of custody of who's in charge as a responsible registrant.
Did you hear the question, Ryan?
No, I'm sorry.
Yeah, the EAC discussed at all the fact that the framing plans produced by TrustFab, which were the basis of my text design, those framing plans are not stamped and signed as far as I can see, like page 475 of our board packet. I didn't know what the EAC's thoughts were on that.
I do remember Carmen seeing something in the notes that they talked about it, but didn't find a violation, but I don't remember why. I'll have to try to find it again. You remember,
Carmen? It does.
What page was
Carmen
that?
And
Carmen, what page is that on, maybe, please?
Well, 475 is one of TrustFab's framing plans that is not stamped and signed, and I'm just wondering what the EAC's opinion was on that. I know it starts with the registrant structural engineer and their stamped and signed, and it ends with the trust is being stamped and signed, but in between there seems to be like this gap.
Yeah, so
you know what I mean?
So page 475, Mr. Demlin provided this at the end. So this is a Greenfield Village building deep remodel. It's completely separate. He just provided that as another example. So it has nothing to do with this project.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, so he just submitted that as an addition. So I just provided that for you as well.
Carmen and everybody, I'd like to maybe just talk through what I understood from this case, because it's definitely a very complicated case. And Mr. Demlin, being a member of the EAC or of a, you know, enforcement advisory committees, first of all, I appreciate all his time to those, because you get cases like this. Secondly, there was one of the assessments that was very helpful to me in this case. It was the Baker assessment, I believe.
Yeah.
Very detailed. So here's my understanding is, let me go back. Because I think that the software was provided by the MyTech to everybody. So MyTech developed a software, presumably the structural engineer who prepared the calculations for the software, you know, or the software code, and then provided that software to the truss fabricators so that they could input the data, the dimensions of the project, and come up with the truss design. So I see that as MyTech actually designed the truss, not the guys at the at truss fab. And evidently there was an error when trust by measure the trust. I would be very concerned if they had not visited the site. But they measured the trust, and nothing says that the structural engineer has to measure the trust. So somebody measured it, made a mistake, entered the information in the software, and then when MyTech reviewed that, it didn't find any issues because they hadn't measured it. So if the trust was met correctly, it would have worked fine. The issue was a measurement issue, not a design that the truss was insufficient. And then upon finding it, then we had the respondent on 6A1, Mr. Trummer, find a fix for it on how to make the truss work. So I see MITEC as the engineers, and, you know, they're responsible for engineering. So was there an issue on the project? Yes. It seems to me more like a civil liability issue than a professional practice issue, because, you know, that the engineering was correct. The measurement was off. And so whose responsibility is that? I think beyond the board's purview. Does that make sense? Does anybody see something different?
No, makes sense to me,
yeah,
Alejandro.
I thought Baker did a very clear assessment of the of all four. So, Dr. Angel, you're satisfied then with the EAC results?
I am, but I mean, if Mr. Demlin has anything else that we misinterpret, I mean, I definitely want to hear from both parties if we misinterpreted something before we decide. Is that okay?
Yeah. Mr. Demlin?
Yeah, star 6 to unmute yourself.
Sorry about that. I hate this little stuff yet. Thank you very much. There's 2 points that I want to make out to this bill.
Hello?
And that is, as a registrant, I am required to have myself or a bona fide employee do the work. And the question at this point is TrustFab a bona fide employee of MITEC? One of those trust fixes that they talked about, it was a recalculation because the gable trusses that came out on the package for deferred submittal had gable vents in them, which the original design did not, and the delivery of those trusses were there. So they were re-correcting something that was misfabricated to begin with. The thing that I want to say about this is what Carmen brought up is that the engineer needs to involved in these framing plans. In that one we're talking about, which is a different one, we'll see that the TrustFab literally changed 90 degrees the direction of the framing plan to better fit what they wanted to do. However, it wasn't in compliance with it. This is where the engineer needs to be involved. And at this point, the way it's set up, MITEC absolves itself in litigation. What we'll find out is that if we ever had a collapse of a building in this particular scenario, like the higher Regency, we'll end up with MITEC saying, oh, it's not my fault. However, after the higher Regency, the American Society of Civil Engineers changed their code of ethics saying, Mr. Engineer, you seal it, you're responsible. And we've got MITEC sitting here saying, well, we're only doing the design, but there's a gap because the actual layout and there's engineering judgment being used that's not used executed by an engineer. And that's where this case falls apart as far as I'm concerned. There should be an engineer at TrustFab making these changes and making these decisions, and there's not. They're non-registered, and then MITEC aid and abet by it. I hope that makes that a little clearer.
Thank you, Mr. Demlin. Any more discussion, board? I'd entertain a motion.
Mr. Chair, again, I appreciate Mr. Demlin's thoughts. I still don't see TrustFab doing any engineering. I see them using software that's the responsibility of MITEC, and they did sign those drawings for those trusses. So I would move that we're working through 6A1 through 6A5, I think, right as consent items, and I would move that we dismiss those cases as recommended by staff and the EAC.
Second.
Kurt, can you do a roll call, please?
Dr. Alejandro Angel?
Aye.
Jack Gilmore?
Aye.
Neil Jones?
Aye.
Clarence McAllister?
Aye.
Carmen Wyckoff?
Aye.
Stephen Knoll? Maybe he's muted. Star 6, Steve, to unmute yourself. I'll go on. Andrew Everode?
Aye.
Aye.
In these circumstances, I know the motion will pass, but I don't know what Steve's vote is.
Do you have a quorum?
We have a quorum. Number six?
We do have a quorum of votes.
Okay.
Star six, Steve. Or bottom of your screen, there's a little unmute button.
He may have stepped away.
Yeah, if we have six votes, that means quorum.
Yeah.
So the vote passes.
And then I would just point that Steve was did not make the vote.
Yeah, Steve was unavailable for this vote.
Okay, motion carried.
Or was absent.
Absent. Yeah, absent.
All right, that we have dismissed cases 6A1 through 6A5. Gentlemen, thanks for calling in. I think it's time to move on to our motions to deem. This is the date, time, and place for the matter dealing with case number. Do we have a sequence for these? If we follow the order. Mr. Sullivan is here. Okay, let's do Mr. Sullivan first.
Which one do you want?
582.
So Mr. Sullivan showed up just now for the second deem, which is Deanie's, I believe.
Okay.
Deanie, are you on the phone?
I am on the phone. Can you hear me?
Yes, I can. I just want to let you know that Mr. Thomas Sullivan has appeared physically here at the office today.
Yeah, okay.
Okay.
Okay. So let me start again. This is the date, time, and place for the matter dealing with. Case number is H119-011, involving Mr. Thomas Sullivan. Will the parties...
Deanie Ray appearing for the state. I'm sorry, Deanie Ray appearing for the state.
And the respondent?
Mr. Sullivan, can you please
can you
come forward?
Step forward, Mr. Sullivan?
You want me to come forward? Okay.
And please identify yourself for the record.
Tom Sullivan, Inspector Chen.
Thank you. Have a seat.
Thank you.
The state filed a motion for the board to deem the allegations in the complaint and notice of hearing as admitted. If granted, the board will treat all allegations in the complaint and notice of hearing as true and move directly to a determination of what discipline is appropriate in light of the violations. The state will present a brief statement to the board about its request, and then the respondent can address the board. Please address your remarks to the issue of whether you received the complaint and notice of hearing, and why you did not timely file an answer as required by the board's statutes and rules. Will the state begin the presentation?
I'm sorry, I didn't hear that last part, that I didn't do what?
That you did not timely file an answer required by the board's statutes.
Oh, based upon what was most recently mailed to me?
I believe that's correct, yeah.
Okay, okay.
So,
you
you'll have
to
a chance
make that
to,
statement now?
No, the state will present their case first, and then you'll have a chance to respond.
Okay, because the only reason I didn't respond, because it was like, it said that if I wanted to respond with a defense, and I didn't have a defense, I'm not denying the thing.
Okay. Let's let the state make the presentation, then we'll open the floor to yourself, Mr. Sullivan.
Okay. Can I ask a question first? I don't mean to be interruptive, but I'm a little bit confused on the whole thing, because the reason that I'm here today had already been dealt with way back in 2018 and in 2019. I just wanted to look here and see if it was the same case number. It is, it's the exact same case number. So it's like I've already been into the board for this exact thing, and we've had a hearing, and the determination was made, and I already admitted to the fact that I was not registered, and during that non-registration period I did have an active website that was promoting my company, and that the inspection that was alleged to have been done by me during that period was actually done by an outside 1099 contractor that I hired for that, and I was issued I believe it's called a consent order or something like that.
Consent agreement?
A consent agreement. And I was dealing back with Bill William at the time, way back then. I called in about and spoke to Doug probably about a month and a half ago or so about this. You might even recall it was a brief conversation. I only deal with a lot of people, and I said, Doug, what's going on? I said, this whole thing was completely resolved. And he said, correct me if I'm wrong, he said, well, I can't really discuss it with you because it's in the hands of the Attorney General's office at this point, and so you just need to come in for the hearing. So,
You are wrong, and I will correct you.
What's that?
You are wrong, and I will correct you.
Thank you, I appreciate it.
Mr. Sullivan, I'd like to stay on our protocol, which is allow the state to present their case, and then give you a chance to respond.
Okay.
If that's all right.
Yeah, and I didn't mean to interrupt the protocol.
Yeah, no,
I was just trying to be expedient for you.
I appreciate that, believe me. Dee, can you go ahead and make your presentation for the state?
Yeah, the information that I received was that the respondent still had this pending matter. So I think you need to probably ask Mr. Parlin what the respondent is talking about with regard to some earlier consent agreement and what that dealt with as opposed to what this is dealing with. I don't think that Mr. Sullivan is contesting the events of what happened or the facts. So, but I can't answer the question whether or not he did some kind of other consent agreement that covered this particular situation. My information is that he did not, and I had a copy of a consent agreement that was not signed. So I think you need to speak with Mr. Parlin to get the history on this.
Okay. Ms. Parlin, can you share some history?
Well, I don't have the dates in front of me, Mr. Chairman, but I did have a conversation with Mr. Sullivan, I would say, a month or so ago.
Yeah.
He did call about this issue, indicated that he had received a letter from the board regarding the hearing, and he wanted to know why a hearing was scheduled. So I explained to him very thoroughly that the consent agreement was offered as a result of a board decision. And again, I don't have the date when that decision was made.
I do recall that, and I apologize.
Yes. And so I explained the process. When a consent agreement is offered, there's a timeline of 30 days to sign the consent agreement, return it to the board to settle the matter. And that wasn't done. That's why this case is now a hearing case. So to further that, I did mention to him or talk to him that there's nothing that I can do at this point in time to settle the matter. So you would have to contact Ms. Ray. And if he is interested in settling the matter without going to hearing, that she would be the person to talk to. And he confirmed that he had her information. So that's the way it was left.
Yeah, okay. I would say that that's accurate.
Was there a reason you didn't sign the consent agreement?
You mean way back when? Because
yeah.
I actually ended up with two consent agreements. I had one, and then I took some notes. This was back in March when Bill William was still here. It was on March the 4th, and I apologize, I did not take notes when you and I spoke. Usually I do. And on March the 4th of 2019, I had spoken to Bill William about the consent agreement, and I told him that based upon what we had discussed and etc., because I was not the inspector of the Spurcross property, it was one that I had given off to a contractor. We were just too busy to do that, and although admittedly, I did, I was lapsed in my registration, not purposely, but I, nonetheless, that did occur, and that I did still have an active website at that point. And it was my understanding at that point that I was going to be issued a letter of reprimand, and that the consent agreement, et cetera, of the $200 and $140 was not going to be imposed, and that Bill said that there might be a hearing regarding that because of the fact that it had been imposed, although he gave me this verbally, and I said, okay, fine. And he said at the time, and I wrote this down because it seemed kind of important, Bill, I wrote out verbatim, Bill called, setting up meeting, said that I should think about it, think about the meeting regarding the consent agreement, because he said if you come in for the consent agreement, it says, and I quote, they could go for the full fine of $2,000 if I had the hearing. And I said, well, I said what was discussed was that there would not be any fine or investigative fees imposed upon me because I did not perform the inspection, that I would have only a reprimand letter. And then subsequent to that, there never was a hearing in March, but subsequent to that, Bill called me, and unfortunately I did not put the date on here, but it is in different type of handwriting, larger handwriting, so I know it was at a different point in time, not part of the original note that I wrote on the envelope. And he said, no need for the hearing. And I, he said, all was dropped. And that's what I wrote on the envelope.
Ms. Parler, are you aware of any of this dialogue?
No, I am not.
No, and he wouldn't be. And so at that point, and he said that he would be sending me something by email and by regular mail as well. And I had these sitting on my desk, kind of the action area of my desk off to the left corner. And I, so I had these things sitting here for months, and I never received any email. I never received any letters. I never received anything. So it sat there and sat there for several months. Ultimately, I ended up putting these into an archive storage file. I had to dig them out yesterday. I couldn't even find them.
Ms. Song, are you currently registered? Is your firm registered?
Yes, absolutely. As a matter of fact, when I was not registered, the couple things that we don't know, my, I guess for lack of a better term, my defense, I wasn't saying that I wasn't non-registered, but at the time, and all of the records that I have here in the paperwork reflect all this, which I'm sure is in your computer somewhere, that my defense was that I never received the notice for the firm registration. And so what we don't know, well, what we do know is that I was not registered for a period of time. As soon as I was notified of it, I went ahead and paid the $75. I don't remember if there was a penalty with that or not. And I became current on my registration. And then we went through this. There were probably at least two meetings that we had here regarding all of this.
With
here
Mr. Wood?
And then...
Pardon me, Mr. Sullivan, Mr. Chairperson, this is Mona Baskin. I'm the Assistant Attorney General that is serving as the independent advisor in this case. Mr. Sullivan, my role here is to advise the board. Ms. Ray's role here is as an advocate for the state. What is before the board currently is the, and apologize, I'm going to have to take off my headphones and connect differently to the board because I'm getting a lot of feedback. Pardon me, can you hear me all now?
Yes.
Hello?
Yes.
Yes, thank you all for your patience, and I certainly apologize for that. Mr. Sullivan, members of the board, Ms. Ray, what is before the board currently is the motion to deem allegations admitted. It is not the time to litigate the factual findings in this case. Mr. Sullivan
had that opportunity when he received a complaint and notice of hearing. So I just wanted to put the board back on track here, and maybe the board would need to hear from Ms. Ray on her position on this issue, on how she wishes to go forward. Thank you.
And I apologize for digressing. I didn't really mean to do that. It was only brought up for clarity purposes, just to kind of get a timeline here. And so, you know, the bottom line,
Mr.
is
Sullivan,
I had no reason.
Let's have Mr. Ray speak. If we need to get back on track, we understand you didn't mean to interrupt, but let's have Ms. Ray present her case, please.
Ms. Ray?
I'm sorry, I was muted. Can you hear me now?
Yes.
Okay, so what we have in front of us is a motion to deem, and essentially Mr. Sullivan has appeared and is, I assume, objecting to the motion to deem based on his conversations with Bill Williams. So there are only two people who know what that conversation was. That would be Mr. Sullivan and Mr. Williams. And if you have concern about this, I think you could continue it and contact Mr. Williams and ask him to appear before the board and discuss what he said and what Mr. Sullivan said during that conversation. But it sounds to me as though Mr. Sullivan is not objecting to the facts, that he is agreeing that he was not registered and that he was advertising at the time. So if the violation has been established, the question really comes down to, what are you going to do about it? And the original consent agreement involved a letter of reprimand and a civil penalty of $250 and the cost of investigation of $104. That was the essential gist of the consent agreement. And I think what Mr. Sullivan is arguing is that he would rather not pay a penalty. Now, I will say that it is clear from the record and from what Mr. Sullivan says that he did get re-registered as soon as possible. And so I think that's why the fine was so low, was because it was kind of a technical violation. So I think it's up to the board what you do. You can postpone it. You can, you know, go ahead with the motion to deem. You can set it for a hearing if you want to. But, you know, I don't think there's any reason for a hearing based on what I've heard from Mr. Sullivan at this point.
Okay. Thank you.
Mona, this is Melissa. Would you advise that it's okay for the board to go ahead and grant the motion to deem, establish findings of fact, conclusions of law, and then consider what Mr. Sullivan said when they consider what kind of an order to impose?
Yes, thank you. Again, this is Mona Baskin, Assistant Attorney General, serving as the independent advisor. I believe that all of those options are available. The board could go ahead and continue the case to allow some type of informal settlement to be brought back to the board next month. The board currently has a motion to deem allegations. Again, before the board could grant the motion, has the option to grant the motion to deem allegations, determine the findings of facts, conclusions of law, and then would have the disciplinary options available to it with the input of Mr. Sullivan. I don't know if, you know, Mr. Sullivan would like to state what his position is regarding discipline at this point, but that is something also the board can go ahead and entertain. But I would concur with what Ms. Reyes said, and also your executive director, Ms. Cornelius. Thank you.
Thank you.
And if there are further questions, we could always go into executive session. Thank you.
I think we're ready to make a motion to deem. At this time, the board will deliberate and rule on the state's motion. We can begin with general discussion and move to motions. The first motion will be to determine whether to grant the state's motion to deem the allegations admitted. And Ms. Reyes established the fact that the facts are...
Mr. Chair?
Yeah.
Oh, sorry. This is Alejandro Angel. I wanted to say that, I appreciate everything that Mr. Sullivan brought up, but the statutes, I think, are clear that he had 30 days to file an answer in writing, and he failed to do so. So therefore, I would move that we grant a motion to deem from the state.
Is there a second?
Second.
Okay, thank you. Do we need a roll call?
You repeat the motion, Alejandro. I did not hear just listen to the motion. Please repeat.
Clarence, yeah, I move that we grant the state's motion to deem the allegations as admitted.
Okay, roll call, please.
Dr. Alejandro Angel?
Aye.
Jack Gilmore?
Aye.
Neil Jones?
Aye.
Clarence McAllister?
Aye.
Carmen Wyckoff?
Aye.
Stephen Knoll?
Aye.
Andrew Everode?
Aye.
Motion carried.
Thank you. The board has deemed the allegations in the complaint and notice of hearing is admitted. Is there a motion to adopt the factual allegations and the alleged violations from the complaint and notice of hearings of findings of fact and conclusions of law?
Mr. Chair, this is Alejandro Angel again. Given the fact that Mr. Sullivan is not contesting the fact, and we granted the motion to deem, the state's motion to deem, I move that we adopt the factual allegations and alleged violations from the complaint notice of hearing.
Thank you, Dr. Alejandro. Need a second?
Second.
We have a second. Kirk, can you do roll call, please?
Dr. Alejandro Angel?
Aye.
Jack Gilmore?
Aye.
Neil Jones?
Aye.
Clarence McAllister?
Aye.
Carmen Wyckoff?
Aye.
Stephen Knoll?
Aye.
Andrew Everode?
Aye.
Motion carried.
Thank you. The final issue for determination is the appropriate discipline based on the findings of fact and the conclusions of law we have adopted. We will allow the parties to briefly address the issue, first the state and then the respondent. Ms. Ray?
Yes, I think that Mr. Sullivan is somebody who's basically compliant and has done what he needs to do to correct the situation. So, you know, I know that he said that Mr. William had said that he would only receive a letter of reprimand. I do think that he should pay the cost of investigation. He has, you know, drawn this out a little bit further than it should be drawn out because of the situation. So, you know, I leave it up to the board whether or not to issue the civil penalty.
Okay. Mr. Sullivan, do you want to?
I think that from everything that I've heard here, I think that everybody's treating the whole affair in a fair and proper way. Can't give you anything other than the conversations that I had. I have no reason to be dishonest with the board. I respect the board and the board's position and responsibility, and I would respectfully request only the letter of reprimand, but I would go along with no opposition, whatever the board chooses and feels is fair.
Melissa, can we issue a new signed consent agreement with?
No, you've already deemed the complaint allegations admitted and the conclusions of law have been established. Okay. So now, pursuant to your procedure, it's time to just issue an order to resolve the matter.
Okay.
And this is Mona Baskin. I would concur with Ms. Cornelius that this is the time for the board to issue a disciplinary order based on the arguments of the parties. Thank you.
Mr. Chair, I think Mr. Sullivan's been very cooperative, and I would move to just issue a letter of reprimand.
Mr. Jones, would you consider also adding the cost of investigation? Because I think, I mean, I understand Mr. Sullivan's point, but, you know, he failed to register. He didn't pay registration fees for a year, so he's actually paid less than somebody who would have registered. and he failed to respond. So, yeah, I don't see a need for a civil penalty, but I think it would be beneficial to have the cost of investigation.
No, I'd rather keep it just as a letter of reprimand.
So we have a motion for a letter of reprimand. Anyone else want to second that? We have a second in place. Do we need to...
There is no second that I've heard yet.
Dr. Allen?
No.
Okay, all right. Is there a second to Mr. Jones' motion for just a letter of reprimand?
Motion died.
Okay, that motion did survive.
This is Andy. I've lost audio if anyone's there.
Oh.
Hello?
Okay,
hello?
Andy, we're here.
Kirk, can you make sure we get everybody on board?
I don't see...
Kirk, can you hear me?
Yeah.
Okay, good.
Let's do a quick roll call, make sure everyone's available. All
right,
this is Andy. Can anyone hear me?
Yes.
Yes.
We can.
Yes, Andy.
Can you hear us?
Andy?
Just show up. Just come to the meeting.
Well, we can hear him, but he apparently can't hear us, which is on his end, not my end.
Do we have his number to text him?
So right now, there is no motion on the table right now. So I think there was a recommendation for at least a letter of reprimand, and I think Ms. Ray was suggesting that we impose the administrative penalty.
No, let me correct that. This is Deanie Ray.
Yeah.
What I was recommending is that you have him pay the cost of investigation, which is $104.
Yeah, my mistake. Thank you. Anybody want to make a motion?
Mr. Chair, this is Alejandro Angel. I would move that we issue an order with a letter of reprimand and the cost of investigations payable within
that. Dr. Angel, I would second that.
Okay, thank you. Kurt, we'll get a roll call vote, please.
Dr. Alejandro Angel?
Aye.
Jack Gilmore?
Aye.
Neil Jones?
Nay.
Clarence McAllister?
Clarence.
Aye.
Carmen Wyckoff.
Aye.
Stephen Knoll.
Aye.
Andrew Everoad. Not sure what's up with Andrew. So I'll just count him absent. It passes with Neil, Mr. Jones, saying nay, and no vote from Andy Everoad.
I'm an aye, Kurt.
Oh, good.
Can you hear me?
Okay.
Did you hear the discussion, Andy?
I lost all audio and hung up and called right back in.
Okay.
So,
excellent.
Sorry about that.
Okay, this concludes the proceeding. The board's decision will be reduced to a written order served to parties. The parties will have further appeal rights that will be explained in the board's order. Thank you for attending today. Ms. Sonnian, do you understand the final vote? The letter of reprimand and the cost of investigation, $104. And then I have to make sure you stay current with the board.
Absolutely. I'm current now. I have no reason to challenge the board's recommendation or order, however it is. Like I say, whatever you guys decide, that's good with me. I respect the board.
Thank you for coming in.
And will I receive something today?
No, I think you'll get something in the mail.
Okay. How long should I allow to receive the item in the mail before I contact the board if I don't receive it? Because that was the reason that I was lapsing my registration.
I'm not sure.
Mr. Deanie, I'm sorry, Mr. Sullivan. I Can you make sure, Mr. Sullivan, before you leave, that the board has your correct address and your correct email address? I think that would be helpful.
I will sure do that. Thank you.
Okay.
What's next? Okay, let's move on to 5A1.
Mr. Chairman,
this is the,
if I may please, Ms. Ray, this is Doug Kramer. I'm getting his address and email address. I will email that to you then later today.
Okay, thank you.
All right, thank you. I thank the board for their help and consideration. Thank you, Doug. I always appreciate working with you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Okay, this is the date, time, and place.
Everybody was like,
for the matter dealing with case number AL20-002 involving Mr. Roscoe Gomez is scheduled to be heard by the Arizona State Board of Technical Registration. Will the parties please identify themselves? First the state, then the respondent. Any?
Certainly, Mr. Chair, Scott Donald on behalf of the state from the Arizona Attorney General's Office.
And I don't believe the respondent is present. Is that correct, Kurt?
That is correct.
Should you introduce Mona Baskin?
Yes. Hello. This is Mona Baskin, Assistant Attorney General, independent advisor for the board on this matter. Thank you.
The state has filed a motion for the board to deem the allegations in the complaint and notice of hearings admitted. If granted, the board will treat all allegations in the complaint and notice of hearing as true and move directly to determination of what discipline is appropriate in light of the violations. The state will present a brief statement to the board about its request, and then the respondent can address the board. Please address your remarks to the board or to the issue of whether you received a complaint and notice of hearing and why you did not timely file as required by the board's statutes and rules. Ms. Ray.
Mr.
Oh, I'm sorry, Scott. Mr. Donald, sorry.
That's quite all right. I was wondering if Ms. Ray was going to be appearing for the respondent. Mr. Chair, the state is moving to deem the allegations in this case. Service was accomplished with Mr. Gomez through delivery and signature for receipt of the complaint notice of hearing. And the board has copies of the documents evidencing this. I believe that it would be appropriate at this time for the board to deem the allegations as admitted by the respondent, and I would ask the board to do that.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Donald.
Sure.
Respondent's not available, so we will move on to our motion. At this time, the board will deliberate and rule on the state's motion. We can begin with general discussion. We'll move to motions. The first motion will be to determine whether to grant the state's motion to deem the allegations admitted. Board members, any discussion by the board? Otherwise, I'll entertain a motion.
Mr. Chair, this is Alejandro Ingo. I move we grant the motion to deem.
Second.
Thank you, Dr. Alejandro and Mr. James. Kurt, could you do a roll call, please?
Dr. Alejandro Angel.
Aye.
Jack Gilmore.
Aye.
Neil Jones.
Aye.
Clarence McAllister.
Aye.
Carmen Wyckoff.
Aye.
Stephen Knoll.
Aye.
Andrew Everode.
Aye.
Motion carried.
Thank you. The board has deemed the allegations in the complaint and notice of hearing is admitted. Is there a motion to adopt the factual allegations and the alleged violations from the complaint and notice of hearings and findings of fact and conclusions of law? Need a motion. Okay.
Mr. Chair, I move that we adopt the findings of fact and conclusions of law.
Thank you, Dr. Alejandro. Mr. Jones, Kurt, could you do a roll call, please?
Dr. Alejandro Angel?
Aye.
Jack Gilmore?
Aye.
Neil Jones?
Aye.
Clarence McAllister?
Aye.
Carmen Wyckoff?
Aye.
Stephen Knoll?
Aye.
Andrew Everoad?
Aye.
Motion carried.
Thank you. The final issue for determination is the appropriate discipline based on the findings of fact and conclusions of law we've adopted. We will allow the parties to briefly address the issue, beginning with the state. Mr. Donald.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Chair, I believe in this case, the board has the full range of potential disciplinary actions that could be taken. The issue, however, is that Mr. Roscoe Gomez's registration won't be in compliance unless and until such time as his fingerprint clearance is reinstated, as the board has evidence of this reinstatement. The options that I believe would be most appropriate for the board at this time, at the very minimum, would be a suspension of the license because he is not in compliance with the fingerprint clearance card requirement. The issue becomes how long of a suspension that should be, because the termination could only be upon his bringing the fingerprint clearance card back into compliance. So the board would have a choice between either an indefinite term of suspension with the suspension continuing until such time as he provides a card, or an actual revocation of the license, which would then have its own issues for reinstatement at a later date. There could be some issues that way. I believe most in keeping with the statute would be for the board to have an indefinite period of suspension. I don't know from an administrative point what that would entail on the board's end, but I would request, I believe most reasonable would be for the board to issue an indefinite suspension of the registration until such time as the registrant provides the required fingerprint clearance card. Additionally, I would request that the board find it appropriate to award costs and fees incurred in bringing this proceeding to this point.
I got a question. It seems like this guy has not been responsive at all, and keeping him, off the books, suspended for X number of years, seems like additional work for staff. I'd like to maybe think we should impose some kind of a timeline. Give him a year or two. If he hasn't done it, then we revocate.
And if I may, Mr. Chair, I do believe that that if the board does not have any requirement that he keep, well, he wouldn't be able to renew. So he may simply fall off the books for an expired license if the board has a period of suspension several years.
Why couldn't we just ask them to revoke, and then he can reapply when he gets all of his documents in order if he still intends?
The board certainly
could. Okay.
But given the present fingerprint clearance card issue, the only possible actions, I believe, would be either a suspension or a revocation.
Okay.
But a suspension would have to be an indefinite period until the clearance card is provided.
Sounds to me like a revocation would be cleaner.
Well, that would be the board.
Okay.
Any discussion by the board? I guess
this is Alejandro. I guess I'd like to do a suspension, but if we can't get a hold of him, I'm not sure that solves anything. So I am going to move that we revoke.
We have a motion.
Second.
Kirk, could you do a roll call, please?
Dr. Alejandro Angel?
Mr. Chair.
Sorry.
If I may, I apologize, but does that motion encompass any award of costs and fees incurred bringing this prosecution?
It's unlikely we're ever going to hear from this guy ever again. I would just move to revoke.
I'm torn because, I mean, what's the likelihood that we'll recover anything, and how much effort is it going to be?
Okay.
Thank Anybody you. Has any thoughts on that?
Nope. Okay, so the motion stands. Kirk, can you do the roll call?
Okay, starting over again. Dr. Alejandro Angel?
Aye.
Jack Gilmore?
Aye.
Neil Jones?
Aye.
Clarence McAllister?
Aye.
Carmen Wyckoff?
Aye.
Stephen Knoll?
Aye.
Andrew Everode?
Aye.
Motion carried.
Thank you. This concludes the proceeding.